Okay. Ramon, are we clear?
Yes, we're good to go.
Good. Good morning and welcome to the February 25th meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Plan Commission. If you would all unmute your microphones, I'll ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Villacana?
Present.
Commissioner Moltari?
Here.
Commissioner Spearman?
Here.
And Chairman Campbell?
Here. Would you please now join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you all. Good morning, everyone. The County Planning Commissioners, planning staff, and members of the public wishing to provide live public comment are participating in this meeting using Zoom. Alternate methods for public participation can be found and attached to the agenda, as well as a link to Zoom user guide for public participation. The public may watch or listen to the meeting live online at www.slocounty.ca.gov. If you are a member of the public wishing to provide live public comment and have joined us by website or smartphone application, when I call for public comment on a specific item, please do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen. If you are joining us by phone, please press star 9 to raise your hand. When it's your turn to speak, the clerk will unmute your connection, announce your name or the last three digits of your phone number if you are calling in, and let you know that you are live on the line to make your comments. You will be timed for 3 minutes as usual. If you are streaming the meeting through Channel 21 or county website and wish to provide live public comment through Zoom, please log in or call in early as there is an approximate 60-second delay between the meeting and the live stream. Please remember to turn down your broadcast volume when speaking during public comment to reduce interference and back feedback noise. First item I have is to open public comment. This is public comment for those items which are not on today's agenda. So, Madam Secretary, do we have any indication of public comment?
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Campbell. We did not receive pre-recorded messages for public comment. However, members of the public wishing to speak can do so by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing star 9 at this time. And I am seeing no requests to speak, Chair Campbell.
All right. Then I will close public comment and we'll move on to commission business. Before I ask for planning staff updates, I'd like to clarify a little bit of meeting protocol, particularly for the help of some of the newcomers here. Public comment is very important to public hearings, as you probably know. So the staff will introduce the hearing item, and then the applicant or representative will give remarks. We ask that you only ask questions to clarify any thing about those presentations. Save your pro and con discussions, limiting conditions, changing conditions, this type of thing until after public comment is closed. So we all get ourselves in trouble sometime by getting carried away without hearing from the public. So that may ease things a little bit as to when to get into in-depth discussion about things.
Very good. Thank you. Good point.
Now I would like to call on Alexandra for planning staff updates, please. Excuse me.
Good morning, Chair Campbell and Commissioners. Alexandra Feller representing the Planning and Building Department. The following is a summary of pending Board of Supervisors action that pertains to your commission. On March 2nd, the Board of Supervisors will consider the following appeals of actions by your commission. The first is Appeal 2020-0002, and that is of the Flying Caballos DRC conditional use permit. Your commission approved that item on February 27th, 2020, and the project was to allow temporary events at 1150 Farmhouse Lane, just east of the city of San Luis Obispo. The second appeal item is Appeal 2020-00020, and that is for the Kyler Canyon Winery. Your commission approved that project, and it is for a 8,754-square-foot winery and processing facility located at 1535 Kyler Canyon Road, west of the city of Paso Robles. For your March 11th meeting, the following items have been tentatively scheduled. A conditional use permit, DRC 2020-00101, is a request by AT&T to construct a new wireless facility consisting of a 70-foot monopine faux tree with associated antennas and equipment located at 1070 Ladera Lane, just south of the city of Paso Robles. The second item on that agenda is a development plan and a coastal development permit, DRC 2019-00297, and that is a request by Jay and Lisa Cobb to construct a three-story, 17-unit hotel with on-site public amenities for passive and active recreational uses, and to modify the modification to reduce the number of required parking spaces. That project is located on the south side of North Ocean Avenue within the community of Cayucas. For your March 25th agenda, you have several items. The first is a minor use permit, coastal development permit, which is a request by the Port San Luis Harbor District to allow for outdoor storage of sea train containers in a portion of the Avila Beach parking lot located at 450 2nd Street in the community of Avila. This item was originally scheduled for your December 10th, 2020 meeting, but it was continued by your commission at the applicant's request. The second item is a development plan and coastal development permit, which is a request by Chevron to amend a previous approval, to construct and operate a soil management area for handling hydrocarbon-affected soils that are generated as part of the ongoing restoration activities at the former Guadalupe oil field. The project would disturb approximately 18 acres of a 936-acre project site, including 1.2 million yards of earthwork. The project is located at 2184 West Thornberry Road, approximately 5 miles southwest of the community of Napomo. The third item is a conditional use permit, and it is a request by Robert Gold to establish cannabis operations consisting of indoor and outdoor cultivation, a commercial nursery, manufacturing, processing, non-storefront dispensary, and a modification to the required number of parking spaces. That project is located at 2685 Lynch Canyon Road, north of the community of Oak Shores and west of the community of San Miguel. And the last item on that agenda is a development plan, coastal development permit, and it is a request by Verizon for the construction and operation of an unmanned wireless communications facility on a new 31-foot tall light pole with associated antennas and equipment, and it is located within the shoulder of a San Simeon Community Service District maintained right-of-way near 9127 Avon Avenue in the village of San Simeon. This concludes planning staff update. We are available for any questions that you may have.
Questions of staff?
No, sir.
Thank you, Alexandria. Appreciate that. We're moving on to consent agenda. Consent agenda. Does anyone want to remove for further discussion any item there? We only have one item.
Chairman, I just wanted to bring one thing up on just a spelling error. Instead of the 75 succession rate, it should be 75% success rate.
Yes, instead of succession. Okay. Duly noted. Any further comments? I'll call for a motion on the consent agenda, please.
So moved.
Second.
And second by Alex. Those in favor of figurized by saying aye.
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 Motion is carried. We'll now move on to hearings, one for the day. So, Johnny, you have the whole program this morning. So we'll now ask Ramona to please introduce this.
Chair Campbell, I would remind the commission to disclose any ex parte communications that you might have had.
I have that on my list after she introduced
it. Okay, just making sure. I wasn't privy to your list.
Whatever you want me to do.
Perfect.
Hearing item number 4 is a hearing to consider a request by the Pearson family for a lot line adjustment coastal development permit. County file number DRC 2017-00083, Supervisorial District Number 2, Shawnee Seong, Project Manager. And if there's any members of the public wishing to speak at public comment, please use the raise hand feature. Or if you're calling in by telephone, please use *9 in order to be ready for the public comment portion of the hearing. Please continue with your presentation, Ms. Seong. Thank you.
Thank you, Ramona.
I'll call for ex parte. Anyone have any thing to say on ex parte about this item?
Yes, sir.
Your point's well taken, John. It's probably better before the introduction that I don't have to interrupt somebody.
It's quite all right, Don. thank you. Thank you, everybody. Good morning, Chair Campbell and Commissioners. Thank you all for taking the time this morning to meet on this project. So what we have this morning is a request by the Pearson family for three separate entitlements. It's a lot line adjustment between two parcels. It's a minor use permit, postal development permit to build two houses, and a variance to allow for grading over 30% slopes. Typically, a lot line adjustment and a minor use permit in a coastal zone, it will be actioned by the planning department hearing. But because this project also includes a variance request, this project now comes before the commission for your consideration today. The project is located southwest of Highway 1. It's between Harmony Headlands and the Estero Bluff State Park. It is in the agriculture land use category. The site, as you can see from this aerial photograph, is outlined here in red, is undeveloped at this moment. It is adjacent to the Cayucas Abalone Farm. So due to several constraints on the project site, which makes a direct access from the site to Highway 1 very challenging, the Pearson family has secured an access easement from the Abalone farm owners to use the existing road, which is highlighted here in that white dotted line here, to get to their parcels and use it as their main access to get to their parcels. Excuse me. I will expand on the constraints and the environmental concerns as I go along my presentation. But here's a quick diagram that outlines the various constraints on this site. So all these colored bubbles, they represent constrained areas for various reasons, which leaves a small area portion of the site feasible for any development. So these constraints basically drove the final project design as we see today. So we're going to focus on the lot line adjustment request. Here's the map showing the existing configuration of the two parcels. Existing parcel 1 basically is most of the site. Existing parcel 2 is a small parcel along Highway 1. This parcel is mostly covered in riparian habitat because of the creek corridor. The proposed adjustment will then shift that line away from the creek and over the hill and to allow for two buildable areas on each of the resulting parcels. So
So parcel one will now be 20 acres on the marine portion, on the marine territory portion. And parcel two will now become 101 acres with a buildable area just below the ridge line. This project also includes the creation of two building envelopes, 1.5 acres each, as shown here in these yellow patches. The location of these two envelopes, they have been carefully considered after extensive studies of the various site constraints. The purpose of these envelopes is to concentrate the development into two areas that have been analyzed to have the least environmental impacts, particularly visual and geologic risks, and also to limit the overall disturbance to the grazing land. With that said, the County Land Division Ordinance, Section 2102030, requires that any new adjusted parcels shall maintain a position which is better than or equal to the existing situation. The reconfigured lot lines does allow for better uses of these lots based on the existing topography and constraints. The provision of the building envelopes will also limit the overall site disturbance, as all the areas outside the envelopes will be placed in an open space easement per the recommendations of the Ag Commissioner's Office. So now we're going to focus on the residential development that requires the minor use permit, coastal development permit. And here we're looking at the proposed residence on the adjusted parcel one, which is on the Marine Terrace side. So what we're looking now is the site plan with the constraint maps. It's tilted horizontally and then the Pacific Ocean's on the left. So this parcel, being on the Marine Terrace site, is pretty constrained due to the steep slopes. We have geologic concerns on the upper portion of the parcel. The natural bluff erosion and the setback requirements on the bluff site, and also the presence of several historical and archaeological resources on this site of the terrace. So all the development on parcel one will be located inside this envelope, apart from the existing driveway that will be improved a little bit to serve the new residences, and also a new septic tank, a septic system and an underground water tank. Here's the elevation of the proposed single-story residence. It's low-profile design, and the intention is to use earthy color schemes as conditioned by the permit to reduce its overall visibility. So being on the side of the terrace, the existing hill does provide an intervening visual barrier from the highway and any public areas. So we're now moving up to the parcel two. Here's the proposed residence. It's located a little higher on the hill. This parcel has its own constraints. We're going to look at the site plan now rotated again horizontally. Highway 1 is on the right here. So the constraints on this parcel is mainly the creek corridor that kind of prohibited a direct access to and from the highway onto the parcel directly. So this green cloud here is showing the extent of the riparian habitat. And then the majority of the upslope area, which is the red and the blue bubble areas, they are highly visible from the highway. So then you also have the geologic concerns on the most western portion of the parcel. So that's the constraint of this parcel. And because visibility is a major concern for the development on this parcel, the applicant has conducted a visual study in 2017, and the study evaluated the visual impacts taken from six viewpoints, three along Highway 1 traveling north, and then one from the State Park's Estero Bluffs State Park, one north of Morro Bay, and actually one from all the way from State Highway 46 looking down southwest towards the property. So we're just going to go through real quick the images of this viewpoint. So the picture on the top is before, and the picture below is with the flags of stake on the property, and then just kind of give you an idea how that project will sit on the site. So this here, we have three images taken from Highway 1 as one travels north. This is the left view is a view taken from the Estero Bluffs State Park. The right view here is in taken from Highway 1, but closer to Morro Bay, north of Morro Bay. And then this one here is the one taken from State Highway 46 looking southwest towards the property. So based on this visual study, the recommended mitigation measures included limiting the development heights to a maximum of 15 feet, and also other elements such as landscaping, exterior lighting, material selections, they were all very carefully prescribed. Here's an elevation of the proposed residence on parcel 2. Again, it is designed a low profile to meet the 15 feet height limit. Okay, so now we're moving on to the third request. It is the variance. Variance is to allow grading over 30% slopes. So the initial project information we received showed that the grading over 30% slopes occur on portions of highway, I'm sorry, parcel one, just this little purple line here. Then as of Tuesday this week, the applicant's engineer provided a colored exhibit which showed the grading over 30%, which is the areas shaded purple, also includes portions of the driveway for parcel two. So this inclusion is now reflected on the project description, the revised findings and conditions as described in the memo that was issued out this week. So throughout this presentation, we have covered the site constraints that led to the final design of the parcel configuration, the locations for the envelopes, and the residential design. We have also discussed the potential visual concerns. And in order to be consistent with the county LCP's coastal visual resource protection policies, several mitigation measures we developed agreed by the applicant and is incorporated into this project as conditions of approval. The county also had placed a notice of requirement on this project, which essentially requires the owners to disclose all the conditions that run with this entitlement to future owners and successors. The final component of this project is the protection of coastal ag resource policies pursuant to the LCP and agricultural element. So here's a GIS map that we produced. It shows two small areas at the periphery of the site that actually has prime ag land. So prime ag land is defined as class 1 or 2 soils if irrigated, and the majority of the site is in class 4. Other than the two green spots. The natural terrain of the site, which typically is the riparian over here along the creek and also the coastal bluff, they has not been conducive to support any irrigated crop production over the years, and so the parcel has been historically used as grazing land. And so per the CZLUO, single-family residence on ag parcels is an allowed use as long as it is located outside of prime soils and does not adversely impact agricultural production. So given the historical grazing use of the site, the Ag Commissioner's Office supports the project and recommends placing the remaining areas outside the envelopes into an open space easement for grazing management purposes. So this level of preservation is consistent with the LCP, ag element, and the exterior area plan policies for agricultural parcels. We also received a letter from the Abalone Farm owners yesterday expressing the concerns listed here. I will respond to each of this in my next few slides. The neighbor pointed out the access easement. It was granted in good faith to serve no more than two residences. So this project as designed is consistent with the granted access use. There is also concern about possibly non-conforming uses of the historic Coast Guard structure. So the county has discussed this with the applicant's agent, who, by the way, they are online here and they're able to answer any questions. They have agreed to this new proposed condition that would prohibit the historic structures on Parcel 1 from being used for any residential occupancy. However, being a historic structure, we would allow maintenance and restoration work to restore the Coast Guard house as necessary. The neighbor also raised the point and concern about the coastal trail alignment being that terminates onto the Alexander's property, which is the Abalone Farm, and it may cause undue burden. So I'd like to clarify something for the record. The proposed coastal trail map that was published in the staff report is actually an older alignment version, so I apologize for that. So sometime mid-2018, Coastal Commission and county staff, we went out to the site to evaluate the feasible alignment options that would connect to the trail that was recently approved on the adjacent western parcel, which is shown here with the solid green arrow. So that's the Schneider's property. And that's the, so Coastal Commission staff, they approved a coastal trail, and it, for that parcel, it terminates here. And so because of that, the county staff and Coastal Commission staff went out on site to figure out a most feasible connection point that would traverse over Pearson's property. And so this is the final alignment that was, the green line is the recommended alignment by Coastal Commission staff. And then the blue line is an alternative alignment that is proposed by the applicant today. And it actually follows the existing dirt road, and it would exit onto Highway 1 directly from their own parcel. So so this is the final alignment that we have. And then just for something to consider, because this is a coastal development permit within an appealable zone, Coastal Commission ultimately will have the final review and approval of this alignment and this project itself. Then another point the neighbor is making is about the level of improvement to the access road and potentially impacts to biological resources. So the easement that was prescribed in the recorded easement document, that easement language called up for a 30-foot wide access roadway, which is adequate to accommodate any improvements to meet CAL FIRE standards, which typically requires a 20-foot wide with two feet shoulders. As for the biosurvey, the 2001 biosurvey, it was extensive. It had identified several sensitive plants and animal species. And with that, they also recommended mitigation measures such as avoidance and restoration planting. So as a good practice, the county typically requires pre-construction surveys prior to any ground disturbance as a way to implement the survey recommendations. So the county is proposing to add this condition to complement the survey to require pre-construction surveys for this project. I apologize for the amount of text and the small text here, But essentially, this condition, this pre-con survey condition, covers sensitive plants, animals, and also nesting birds. And it would allow for an updated assessment of the site to, and also include any off-site improvements to the access road.
Right.
And then the final point on the letter, it speaks to the parcel being defined by the ag element as row crops, terrain, and soils. Well, this is because of that small portion of prime ag land that was mapped on parcel one. So this situation is possibly a result of a broad-scale criteria mapping as defined by the ag element, because this definition is applied across any agricultural parcel that's more than 10 acres. They're deemed to be capable to support intensive farming operations if they have class one or two soils, if they're situated on coastal valleys with pretty flat terrains. So after a site visit, it is clear that the site-specific conditions on parcel one near the bluff, it is not conducive to support irrigated crop operation, and that's why it may not have happened over the years. The prime soils is located along the natural bluff gully on a sloping terrain. So as discussed earlier, the remaining portion of parcel one is constrained by other factors, such as the risk to the landslide on the upper portion and archaeological resources that's on this marine terrace. So based on all the information available, relocating the home site on parcel one would be infeasible. So with all that said, staff is recommending your commission to adopt the mitigated negative declaration and approve this project based on the revised findings in Exhibit A and C and the revised condition in Exhibit B and D. This concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions, and so are the applicant's team members.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the staff report?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have several questions, but I think I'll wait until after we hear from the applicant and the public.
Good, good plan. Do we have an applicant or representative here for a presentation?
Thank you, Chair Campbell. We will now unmute a device with Galaxy Tab. You will receive a notification from Zoom, and it looks like you're unmuted. And if you could please state your name for the record.
Yes, good morning. Chair Campbell and Commissioners, my name is Kathy Novak from Novak Consulting, and I'm here along with other members of the project team representing the Pearson family for this proposed project. Before I begin, I'd like to thank all the planning department staff that has worked on this project over the years. It has been somewhat of an exhausting process in that there have been numerous studies which have led to design modifications. And ultimately, we believe, a sensibly designed project that conforms to the county policies and standards. I would also like to thank staff for their positive report and recommendation for approval. Since staff has provided a detailed project overview, I will focus my presentation on the background that led to this design, since this history is important to the final design, the location, and the coastal access trail. The first proposed project in the early 2000s included two homes, one of which was located on the marine terrace, and the other one towards the hilltop on the western side of the property, along with an access road that entered the Pearson property close to the Highway 1 intersection. The overall design was very problematic for several reasons, but mainly for the following. First, the access road was proposed through environmentally sensitive habitat and over the hill to access the home sites, which would have required extensive grading. Two, the hilltop home was identified in a visual study as being seen from the Estero Bluff State Park. Three, this home site required extensive grading and construction of an unnatural berm to screen the home from view. Four, the marine terrace home was located very near the bluff top and virtually on the edge of the gully or washed out bluff edge. Fifth, there was also potential for ag policy conflicts. These and other resource impacts were deemed significant and would have resulted in preparing an EIR for the project as proposed. After that, Several site designs were considered, which led to a number of different studies to further explore the viability of proposed home locations. A new proposal was created that pulled the Moraine Terrace house back from the bluff edge to meet the bluff erosion and setback requirements after the engineering geology analysis was done. This design additionally included a relocated Parcel 2 home on the hilltop to avoid construction of a large berm and to minimize visual impacts. The access road was also modified, and entry to the Pearson property would be through what we know as the Ab Farm property. The Pearsons were granted a 30-foot wide access easement in 2001 and then again in 2003, and I believe you've all been provided a copy of this. Early in the process, county staff encouraged us to engage the Coastal Commission with the project because of the Coastal Trail, visual impacts, lot line adjustment, and other project elements for the home development. With that in mind, we reached out to the Coastal Commission and arranged a time for an on-site meeting with the county staff and us. During this site visit, the Coastal Commission staff took into consideration the resource impacts and asked the applicant if they would consider relocating Parcel 2 home to the Moraine Terrace near the entry point at the Ab Farm. County staff was also amenable to this modification. In addition to the home location, we discussed the desire for the Coastal Trail easement across the property. At that time, the Coastal Commission had not identified the exact connection point on the neighboring property to the north, so we agreed to leave it somewhat open-ended until we could identify a place for the connection. I would just like to note here that the applicant has agreed for years that the 10-foot-wide trail easement would be included with this proposed development. After the Coastal Commission visit, we started in with new studies to evaluate the potential engineering geologic impacts and whether the new Parcel 2 site could satisfy the requirements of the county's engineering geology standards. Those assessments included bluff stability, setback requirements, and other hazards. An initial investigation report was done and then submitted to the county, which was then peer-reviewed by the first company in this long process. Unfortunately, this company's peer review did not come to the same conclusion as the project geologist, and they identified an ancient landslide in the proposed Parcel 2 home area. Further exploration and analysis were done at this site, and then a second firm was contracted by the county to take over the peer review work. After many discussions, a work program to identify the location, the depth, characterization, and more of the landslide was created. All in all, an extensive amount of work was done over a couple of years. However, it was ultimately decided, in concurrence with staff, that the further geologic evaluations on this site were impractical and therefore it was not suitable for development. As a side note, I will say that we continue to do further geological evaluations on the Parcel 1 site, with the most recent one completed by Earth Systems in 2019. Also, a list of the geotechnical investigations is on page 88 of the MND. After that conclusion, we set out to relocate the second home parcel once again. The applicant took a number of different things into consideration before a revised project was created. We worked closely with the staff for selecting and siting a new location so that we could address the applicable county policies and standards. One of the more important issues for consideration was the visual issues. To guide us, we looked at an area around the hilltop that would have the least topographic constraints and then hired SWCA to conduct a visibility analysis and identify any height limitations. This analysis provided us with a clear direction for a specific area on the site to propose a home with maximum allowable heights where structures would not be visible from the key viewing areas. With this study and continued work with SWCA, the architect was able to design the home as proposed with the maximum height limits. A final visual analysis was completed in August of 2017 and submitted to the county for review. Staff has incorporated a final visibility graphic with the proposed home in the mitigated neg deck, and you can find this on page 34. Over the past few years, the applicant has, in addition to the visual study, had an on-site meeting with CAL FIRE to review the proposed access roads and driveways to the proposed homes. The current design was done based upon this meeting and follow-up conversations to make sure that we could propose an acceptable plan. I would also like to note here that there were follow-up evaluations done on both geology of both proposed parcels as well as archaeological investigations. project team worked closely with the engineering geologists, Native Americans, and archaeologists to incorporate design modifications, especially to Parcel 1, to avoid and further minimize any potential impacts to the resources. I know that the Northern Chumash Tribal Council sent a letter supporting this work and the permit process, so I hope you have received a copy of this. Last, on the topic of studies, I'd like to mention that an in-depth historic evaluation was done on what is known as the Kelp Farmer's Home and the Coast Guard Shack by a renowned historian in Chinese culture. Unfortunately, the Kelp Farmer's Home has been in decomposing condition for a number of years, so it cannot be preserved. However, the Coast Guard Shack was in fairly good shape and has been and will be maintained by the Pearson family since they purchased the property in 1999. One other noteworthy component to this project is the California Coastal Trail. As I mentioned previously, we have engaged the Coastal Commission early on with this project. Over the years, I have continually updated their staff with new designs, reports, and other important facts so they can provide us with comments for consideration. Most recently, we had a site visit with the Coastal staff, county staff, and us to walk the property and determine the best and most suitable location for the Coastal Trail. Two primary components for establishing the trail location was topography for feasibility of future use and the connection point of the southern property line for the future. In preparation for the site visit, we had a surveyor stake the northern connection point at the neighboring property so we could see the actual place where the Coastal Trail would enter the Pearson property. We walked the site for a few hours, which gave us on-the-ground knowledge of the terrain and the feasibility, which then led to two options. After further discussion, it was decided to make the center section alignment number one with the alternative leading down the existing dirt road to Highway 1 as the second option. I will note here we worked through the county staff to finalize the trail with the Coastal Commission. In summary, my point for providing all this background and history information is to let you know that the applicant has spent years with studies, explorations, and design work in order to locate suitable locations for these two homes, taking into consideration topography, visuals, sensitive habitat, and geological constraints, and more. Throughout this time, this applicant has always offered numerous project components such as building envelope sizes, lighting controls, color, materials, open space easement, the Coastal Trail, and more as a way to meet the intent of the county policies and to avoid or minimize potential impacts. Last, I'd like to say that the applicant is willing to accept all the conditions of approval included in your staff report and the new ones presented by staff today. On behalf of the Pearson family, I would sincerely ask for the Commission's support of this project as presented. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have, and I do have the project architect and the engineering geologist available to answer any technical questions. That concludes my presentation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kathy. Any questions of the applicant?
Not at this time. For me.
So, seeing no questions on these two, we will open public comment.
Thank you.
What do we have there?
Thank you, Chair Campbell. No pre-recorded messages were received for this item. However, members of the public joining the meeting can request to speak by using the raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen or by pressing *9 at this time. And Chair Campbell, I am seeing no request to speak at this time.
Okay. Certain there's none, then we will close public comment. And staff, do you want to address anything that came out of the public comment per se?
No, actually. I think everything is well presented, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have several questions.
Yeah, let's go ahead with Commissioner questions and comments.
It's hard to know where to start. You know, the applicants and staff have worked years on this, and we've had it for, 10 days or a week. And some of the comments came in from the neighbors yesterday. So it may take us a little while to work through this, I think. My first question is, does and maybe this is a question for John, the county council. Does the county regulations require us to approve two houses on these lots? They are allowed uses, I suppose, but this is kind of presented that it's a given that two houses are permitted. Is that a fair, reasonable assessment of what's before us?
Right. So I would answer that in the sense that they are entitled to their investment-backed expectations in buying the property, correct? They are zoned ag. Ag does allow residential uses to be located on them. That said, they are not entitled to the exact house that they want. And sometimes houses may not be able to be constructed because of certain conditions on them, such as just because you buy, let's say, property that is completely in a sensitive resource area with lots of sensitive species all over it, and you might not be able to develop it because of the particular site constraints. So it's a kind of a long way of answering. Yes, they are entitled to pursue development, and if they cannot develop it, we have to articulate the reasons why. But we should do our best to figure out if there's any way to allow them to construct a house consistent with their investment-backed expectations. But if the constraints are so much that that's impossible, then we need to connect those dots as to why it is impossible to construct what it is that they're asking. And that said, you can also tighten the house. You can lower the house.
Sure.
I would say the McCarthy House in Avila Beach is a good example of how the Coastal Commission kind of walked through that.
I guess my point of raising that is that what the applicants are really asking for is that they have a highly constrained lot, and they're asking for us to move the boundaries of that highly constrained lot so that they can put a house on it. And now suddenly they have two lots and they can have two houses, whereas before they could definitely have one, but the other one would have been heavily constrained. And there may be good reasons for doing this. I just wanted to be clear.
Right. No, and I think that in and of itself plays into the record as to if the second house, if it's difficult to locate it, they didn't have their investment-backed expectations on the first property on parcel. I forgot what it originally was, but the one along Highway 1, that was virtually zero, right?
Right.
But I believe with 100 acres, you are entitled to two homes per zoning. Is that correct, Shawnee?
Not in the coastal zone.
Not in the coastal zone. No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah. So in a way, we're taking an unbuildable lot and making it buildable and now saying, well, you can have two houses instead of one. And maybe that's okay. I just want to be clear what we're doing.
Right. And that might play into, is it equal or better on the lot line adjustment question? Like, is it better? Is it equal? I think we're saying it's better because now one is more usable. But, But now it allows more development.
Commissioner McCurry.
Yes,
this is Steve.
Steve, I can't hear you very well.
Can't hear you, Steve. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Better. Yeah.
So, when the project came in, I have the dubious distinction of being the original project manager on this 20 years ago. And there was a level of analysis done on the 9-acre parcel that's adjacent to Highway 1 as to determine whether or not a project, a residence could be located on there, was feasible. Now, we didn't go to the level of doing geotechnical work to site the septic system, things like that. But given the amount of area, that's actually, there is a substantial amount of area that is out of the floodplain. It was determined that they could essentially get a building permit, or they could propose a development on there that, even though it would be highly constrained, And we would have to make special findings because obviously that would be extremely visible from Highway 1 because it would be in a lot of ways directly adjacent to the highway. You know, we could make the findings because there was really no better location on that parcel, which is what the standards dictate. To put it in the least visible location possible. It doesn't, the standards don't allow us or don't allow really the county to deny development outright if it is within view of Highway 1. Right. So granted, it would be extremely, constrained. And frankly, it wouldn't be a very great place to put a house right next to the highway. But sure. It was determined that could be done and that could meet the standards that are in the LCP.
Okay.
Just to let you know also on one thing, and I don't know that Kathy Novak mentioned this, but while this project was working its way through its permit odyssey, the neighboring property, the Schneider property,
right.
Who your predecessors, I believe, in 1999 approved at the county level, and then it was appealed by the Coastal Commission and spent, mm-hmm. I believe, something like 16 years going through appeals in courts. But Coastal staff advised us, and we passed that recommendation on to the applicant to essentially look at what was eventually approved by the Coastal Commission on that property.
On Schneider's,
as far as scale, size, the limitations of placing the building envelope, the placement of the balance of the property in open space. Whether or not Coastal will be entirely satisfied, they never show us all their cards. But I do know that we have been in regular communication, and I believe Kathy Novak has also been in regular communication with the staff on behalf of the Pearson family. So that was taken into consideration. So we were trying to kind of match in as best we could what was approved on Schneider. That had made it through Coastal Commission and the courts. So we were using that kind of as the template.
Yeah, just for the other commissioners' benefit, and maybe you know this already, but the Schneider case, which is on the adjacent property to the north, or I guess technically to the west, but we think of it as the north, has been went on for almost two decades, and it was highly publicized, very controversial, and this has a lot of parallels to the Schneider case. And I think that's the history that Steve's been alluding to and kind of summarizing for us. And you've kind of mentioned, normally, Steve and Shawnee, when we do something like this in the coastal zone, we do a reference to them or we send them a referral. And, just last meeting, we got a letter from the Coastal Commission staff advising us about what they thought was a good solution. And in the meeting before, when we were in Los Osos, we got a letter from them. And I noticed this time we didn't get anything in writing from them. And I'm a little concerned that without some buy-in from coastal staff, we're going to go through a Schneider-like convolution in trying to avoid that, perhaps. So is there some – I'm trying to feel comfortable that the coastal staff knows what's going on.
I'll take a first crack at answering that. Steve McMasters again, Principal Environmental Specialist. This is a little bit different because in some ways we've had a lot of more informal conversations with coastal staff rather than the more formal written type. Like I said, there was a long period of going back and forth using the Schneider project as a reference point as to what Coastal would essentially accept, possibly wouldn't appeal for as far as development on the site. That was most recent, and we discussed the entire project in January of 2019. We met with I think four coastal staff members, including Dan Carl, who is manager of the director of the Santa Cruz office, to primarily look at the possible coastal trail alignments, but we also discussed the general project constraints and the issues, and we summarized those for them on the site. Coastal, like I said, never shows their cards as to whether or not they're going to appeal something. I feel comfortable that we have addressed the issues that they've raised, both on site and with Schneider, because a lot of the issues are similar. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whether or not it will meet everything that they're looking for, I believe we and the applicant through the design and us through the conditions have addressed everything, but they can change their mind sometimes.
Sure.
So, but it is a hard one just because of the length of time it's been in process. We have a series of communications, but a lot of the communication was done verbally, like on site in meetings, and regular updates with them.
Okay. Okay. There was a comment made, I think, by Kathy that I'm not sure who, that this would go to the Coastal Commission because it's in the appeal zone, but that's only if it's appealed.
That's correct. So your action today would be appealable to the board.
Okay.
If no one appealed your, let's say, if you approve the project today,
yes,
and no one appealed it to the Board of Supervisors, the Coastal Commission would have the option of appealing it to themselves. If this does get appealed to the board, then anyone could appeal that, a decision to approve that of the project at the board level, to the Coastal Commission.
But if we approve,
there is
it,
no,
yeah,
there's no action involving original jurisdiction here where they don't have a permit independent of the county's LCP authority.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Maybe staff, you can comment on the question of the easement. We got that letter yesterday from the adjacent property owners. I'm surprised that they're not testifying today for us. I was a little confused about this access question, whether they seem to be saying that they weren't going to grant access for the widening of the road, which would be required, of course, for the two residents. And I see John's popped up.
Through the chair, John Solbear with County Council. I read the easement. It looked consistent with access rights. I didn't see anything in there that would otherwise prohibit them from using the easement for purposes of constructing a house and accessing it and utilities. I don't really know where that comment was coming from.
Okay.
And the other thing, just as a matter of for discussion, we typically don't parse out easements and nuances in easements as between property owners. We kind of look at the bigger picture. Do they have it? Is it express? What's the width, et cetera, not the particular nuances?
Sure. No, I appreciate that. It seems that's kind of a critical question, though, whether they have access indeed to these two housing sites.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. This is Steve McMaster again. Kind of along with that, you know, that road is fairly well established going to the Abalone Farm. And so just the applicant for the Pearsons have not proposed any improvements to that road to meet fire standards. I did a little just using our GIS and aerial tool, and the developed roadway, which probably includes any shoulders that are existing now, really runs between 20 and 30 feet for most of it, not to say that there may be spots that's slightly under. So the existing developed road appears in large part, or possibly entirely, to meet the access standards already.
Okay.
They've been bringing trucks in and out of there for years.
Oh, yeah. I've been to the Abalone Farm.
Me too, yeah.
A long, long time ago. Yeah. And actually met John Alexander a long time ago. Okay, more specific questions, if I may. I'm sorry but this is a very sensitive site, and one that's like...
Oh, yeah.
That's gone through, you know, the one adjacent went through literally decades of analysis, debate, legal questions, and so on. So I think it's worth taking the time to try to get this one right. My specific questions for staff: does the 15-foot height limit apply to the building envelope on parcel one? It seems to, based on condition 34, but I want to be clear. Shani, Steve,
yes.
Anybody?
This is Shani here. The 15-feet height limitations, the one with the that came out from the visual study, this is actually specifically applied to parcel two because it is higher up on the hill.
Okay, it seems like Well, we want to be careful that we don't go high on parcel. You can't see the house on parcel one, but if it were taller, maybe we could. I'm actually kind of, to me, the visual impacts are probably the most important from the public standpoint. And this is a very sensitive site, particularly from views from the Estero Bluff State Park. So I want to make sure that somebody in the future or some addition to the existing house or something like that, which I don't think is very likely, is going to be tall enough that it becomes visible. And it seems like your condition 34 would apply to both parcels. So you might want to check that before we make any further actions. What other structures would be permitted in the open space easement? Any?
Through the chair, John Solver, County Council. So it says development, and we on the coastal zone, development is broadly defined. So development is prohibited. So everything within the meaning of development, right? Except for those, I'm trying to pull it up. I think it's condition 26. Except for the few things, which is the road. Utilities, you know, to each of the residences, septic and I believe maybe water. But other than that, no development within the meaning of development under the Coastal Act and our code is allowed outside the building envelope. And with the only other carve out that we did was the maintenance of the coast house or the Coast Guard house.
Coast Guard house. Yeah. Coast Guard. So, but sheds, greenhouses,
not
that
allowed.
Kind of stuff are not allowed.
Okay. Not allowed.
In the building envelopes themselves, are those other kinds of secondary structures allowed? Could they do an ADU, for example, or a guest house?
Inside, and I would have to ask I'd have to know what the permitting process would be for each, right? Mm-hmm. I think ADUs is probably a ministerial process. We could include a condition in this that prohibits ADUs.
Detached ADUs, for example, yeah. Or guest houses. I would really be comfortable since what gets approved and gets built is going to be there for generations. I really want to make sure that if this is approved, that the conditions are tight so that in the future we don't see popping up things, because I've seen this on rural properties elsewhere. You know, you get approval for the existing house, and then 5 years later, there's a guest house, and then 2 years later, there's a greenhouse, and then there's a shed. And the next thing you know, you have this little, you know, urban complex, when originally you thought you were building or approving a house with a swimming pool.
Right.
So I think we need to be tight about that. If there are buildings that are approved in the envelope, what level of review would they have? Do we know? I guess
I think it depends on the nature of the improvement. So maybe we can ask Shawnee or Steve, let's say if it's an expansion of the house, that'd be one, or if it was a detached structure, that would be two, right? So I don't know if Shawnee and Steve, if you know those, what the permitting process would be for either of those.
This is Shawnee. Okay, this is Shawnee here. So we looked into this being a coastal appealable zone, being, you know, a parcel within the within the ocean and the first public road. Structures like accessory structures for the support act, those will require a permit, a discretionary permit, a use permit. Expansion of the house for sure will require a use permit.
Minor use permit?
The only thing that would exist.
Coastal permit.
Mm-hmm, a land use permit. Mm-hmm, okay. Coastal development permit. The only thing I would say that may not require, maybe exempt from permit, will be any of those like ag fencing, those typical open pole type ag fencing. So those, those will be probably exempt from permit.
Okay. Does the who is the easement going to be in favor of? Who's going to be enforcing the easement or holding the easement?
It's in favor of the county. So the county is the holder of the easement.
Okay.
And I will note the Coastal Commission executive director has to approve that open space easement and any changes to it.
There too.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, the way the conditions are written, the dedication of the open space easement or the recordation. Sorry, this is, you probably can hear garbage trucks. Thursday morning is garbage day here, so I apologize. Does the, should the recordation of the open space easement, the way it's written, it seems it's based, it happens prior to the grading permit on parcel two. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't record that as a condition of the lot line adjustment so that we don't end up with a house down on parcel one, but no open space easement on the bulk of the property, which is parcel two. Is that something that could we could have as a condition of approval, that the open space easement and the grazing management plan be recorded concurrently with the lot line adjustment if it's approved?
You'd want the, sorry, John Oliver with County Council, mm-hmm. you'd want the open space easement to be recorded after the lot line adjustment so then it properly reflects the new legal description okay. of the two lots. So you'd want it after that. And I think it's, I don't know if it's, is it prior to, I thought it's prior to issuance of a grading permit for either lot, not, it's not specific to lot one or two. So
I thought it said lot two, but if it's for either lot, then I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it being specific to lot one or two. I'm looking.
Yeah. This is Shani. Would it help if I share the open space easement language on the screen for everybody?
The condition?
It is the condition number 21, the open space easement.
Okay.
Is it, can everyone see the screen where the condition is?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, yeah. I thought this would be helpful. The one that we're talking about is condition number 21, open space easement, and this stipulates what can and cannot occur on the parcel. Let's see, we're going to zoom in a little bit. Oops.
There you are.
Okay. Right. So condition number 21, open space easement, talks about if no development could occur outside of the building envelopes, mm-hmm. Except for the restoration, protection, and enhancement of the native riparian habitat, any associated improvements for the trail, any associated improvements for the proposed residents, including the infrastructure needed to support such. And then we talked about adding the restoration right. and maintenance to the Coast Guard mm-hmm. and Chinese House in case they need to. It will... that could occur. It will be subject to any if any restoration or maintenance work will be proposed to those historic structures, they will be still subject to coastal development permit.
Right. When I looked at this condition, I would be more comfortable if it was clear that issuance of a grading permit on either parcels one or two. And that under C, the thing that kind of grabbed me there was associated improvements, including but not limited to. And associated improvements is pretty wide open. And that was the nature of my question before that John answered about what other kinds of structures might be allowed in the open space. I want to make sure that that's not interpreted to include things, the examples like I mentioned before, gazebos, overlooks, picnic areas for the private use of people, where we certainly start to see the property being incrementally developed with things that can be seen by the public and kind of ruining the rural open space.
And Commissioner, we can certainly tighten that up. The intent okay. is only to allow improvements which are needed in order to use the residence on okay. within the buildable structure.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for there. And then I guess I have a problem understanding, and you guys I'm sure have thought about this, and you can answer my question: is how's this coastal trail offer. I guess it's going to be an offer of dedication or offer to dedicate a coastal trail across the property. And then we have alternatives one and alternatives two. When does that take effect, and who chooses the alternatives, and when does that happen? That maybe you could just explain to me how that's really going to work. Steve, or Shawnee or Steve, maybe you've worked on this a lot.
This is Shawnee. I can tell you from a county level, but then maybe Kathy Novak, I'll invite her to talk to, because ultimately what we are doing right now, in the condition for the coastal trail, we have asked that they include the coastal trail in the open space, the alignment for the coastal trail in the open space, but then it's also subject to the final approval by the executive director of the Coastal Commission. So it is actually an interaction between, you know, the applicant. After this approval, it will be between the applicant and Coastal Commission at that final stage.
But when does that happen, Shawnee?
That happens after our approval at the county level. It goes up to the Coastal Commission for their final review and approval, and that's when you start the conversation.
And when you say it goes to the Coastal Commission for their final approval, are you talking about the open space easement being approved by the executive director? I don't understand.
This permit, this application itself,
yes,
and all the conditions that stipulated with this application, that's subject to the final review and approval.
By whom?
By the Coastal Commission.
Well, we just said that but only if it's appealed.
Commissioner Moltari,
yes,
I believe it's condition number 43. So the final execution and recordation of the easement is the timing we have it is prior to occupancy of parcel 2.
Steve, who holds the easement? Is the easement held by the county?
I believe it is offered. The county typically has been taking those easements, but it could, and council can jump in here, it could essentially be accepted by someone else. The Coastal Commission could accept the easement themselves. That's what they do with permits that they issue. But the final form and location is approved by county council as well as the executive director. So ultimately, the final location of the easement is really the trump card is really held by Coastal Commission.
And can I add to that, Steve, to Commissioner Matari's point? It's a timing question, really, in terms of so we landed on prior to occupancy of parcel 2. I know internally with staff are kind of going back and forth. We don't want to hold up construction if we're going round and round and round on the actual location. So the idea was to land there, but certainly you can back it up to the point where you can back it up to prior to issuance of any grading permit. But then the question is how long is it going to take in order to land on the exact language and on the exact location. So what's the sweet spot for on the timing, right?
Right.
And whatever the commission feels is most appropriate. And I probably would make sense to also ask the applicant on that one too.
Yeah. So my thought about that is that the way it's worded now, it sounds like parcel one could be constructed and before we've actually gotten approval of the trail across parcel 2. And I would want to make sure that these things are happening simultaneously or earlier. And if it means squirming back and forth to try to find the correct location, well, that's the way it goes. I mean, this is an important thing, but strikes me that this is a pretty important thing to have secured before we start allowing any construction, or at least, Yeah, I think before any construction, we should have this secured as much as possible. I saw Kathy light up there. Does the applicant, do you want to say something, Ms. Novak?
Yes, good morning, Kathy Novak. So when Dennis Schneider was working with the Coastal Commission on his project, the timing issue became a big thing for that project. So ultimately what they did was the project was conditioned that they would do the Coastal Trail alignment, and they said between the eastern property edge and the top of the ridge line. So they didn't define an actual location for the trail, but they said they would work together and get it done. So what we've tried to do with this particular one, we've got the two options, and I think that the Coastal Commission really wanted to have some time to work out the exact location. So the option number one is the preferred option by the Coastal Commission, and the way that we've worked it out with the Coastal Commission is that if the option one ends up being infeasible for some particular reason, then we'll extinguish the easement on alternative one and then make alternative two the actual easement. So there is some little bit of built-in flexibility, and I guess I can understand your point on timing. Since the Coastal Trail is on parcel two, I would just ask that we look at the timing for the implementation of the Coastal Trail to be tied to the parcel two so that we can work all the things that we need to on parcel two at the same time.
Yeah, but I appreciate all that, and I'm sure you're acting – I know that you guys are acting in good faith. You demonstrated that with this long history of this project. But it's on parcel two only because we're creating parcel two. You know, it's really part of parcel one, which we're now going to divide and create this new parcel. And then, so you see what I'm saying is that there's that argument's a little bit artificial because I'm looking at it as all one piece of property and that we're going to divide it. And that division happens, when that division happens, I don't want to see the conditions that are important to the public, like access and visibility and things like that, be divided as well. They should all be concurrent. It's a difficult thing because the trail's not there now, and we don't know how it's going to connect. We don't know where it's going to connect to. I would say that the connection over by Schneider's property, where you have it running right next to the house, it's not going to be very nice. If this becomes popular in the future, you're going to have people walking right by there. But I guess that's the owner's lookout on how they treat that.
Maybe I can add a little bit more into that one. And we did look at that, and we were out with county staff and Coastal Commission staff. And like I mentioned in my presentation, we had a surveyor go out there and stake it. We realized when we staked it, that it would go along the side of the house. So what's problematic is this, is that the Coastal Commission developed the trail location with Dennis Schneider and said this is where the trail is going to end. And it happened to be in the exact
right at your site.
So is there a possibility of changing the connection but we would have to be involving Dennis's property, trying to change his connection point to push it up a little bit further, and so it would be quite an involved process. So I think everybody realized that, and so we're trying to address that the best we can. So here's another thought for you. The Pearson family is committed to this coastal trail, so that's not the problem. So maybe if we could look at this, that instead of having the timing for the coastal trail involved if they do development on parcel one first, that we say that with a lot line adjustment, that the coastal trail easement will be placed and put in a certain time frame. Let's say if parcel two is not developed within 5 years, 6 years of the construction of parcel one or lot line adjustment or something, then the coastal trail easement will be put in place at that point in time or recorded at that point in time. That would give us time to be able to work with the Coastal Commission, because I think that they see the problem too, and it's a bigger issue. So we need some time to be able to work all these pieces out.
Right, and try to work something out with Dennis on his property so that you can get a better connection, I think. And I don't know how amenable he and his group would be. But
and a lot of it's driven by the Coastal Commission. Would they be amenable to doing that? Because they they finally selected Dennis's, and he has had a survey go out. There is a legal description, and it is recorded, and it is what it is on Dennis's. Yeah. So, but the Coastal Commission would have to be involved in that.
Yep. Okay. Okay. I think you've answered all my questions. Thank you.
And Commissioner Sperman, you were concerned about the easement. Do you have any further thoughts or comments on that?
No, I think that was addressed. They said that the easement allowed them access. The only thing that I was questioning about in the easement, and I think John mentioned it was probably a little bit in the weeds, is what the concerns were in terms of widening it, but you said that it was usable as now, so I don't think I have any concerns with that. The concern I did have, though, was more on the bio report and the date of the bio report. Is the precondition survey, will that address the bio report that it was done in 2001? Because it seems like a more dated document. Could staff just address that or explain that to me?
I think I can. Steve McMaster is principal environmental specialist. So you are correct. The bio report is a little dated. It's also fairly comprehensive. It's actually one of the larger reports we've ever gotten. So as we've mentioned, this has taken kind of a long road. When we were looking at whether or not the bio report would still be valid, in part what we looked at was the conclusions of the report and the findings. And one of the things that that we noted is, for instance, a lot of the most critical findings, the area that is mapped as ESHA and the area that actually has endangered species is in the area associated with Elsley Creek at the far north end where the project is avoiding, except for using the existing culvert that accesses the abalone farm. And so in the areas where the development is actually proposed. So for instance, the parcel 2 on the hilltop was noted to be in the area that is the least diverse. It's primarily dominated by introduced annual grasses. It does have one rare plant that actually has been downlisted. So it's actually gone from, it was considered more rare when the report was written than it is currently. And because the development was really avoiding most of the areas where there was sensitive species identified or habitats, and the limited number of actually rare plants that were identified, we didn't see any that would essentially have been added more recently that would have a high potential to show up that wouldn't have shown up at that time. The pre-construction survey is pretty typical, and it was just an oversight by not including it, because we do recognize that biological species do move around. So even if we had an updated report and they didn't develop the homes until 3 years from now, there still is the potential for species to move around. But we didn't see any gross deficiencies with the report, even though it was rather dated. So that was one of the reasons why we felt comfortable with adding the pre-construction survey, because that's something we would add even with an up-to-date report, just reflecting that biological resources are one of those that does not necessarily stay where they've been identified initially.
So. Okay, thank you very much, Steve.
We have any other further comments from commissioners or staff? If there are none, I'll entertain a motion.
Chair Campbell, I do want to just mention on a point that I think Ms. Novak made on terms of the timing of if you put like a, you have to record the open space or the trail easement within 5 years of X happening, that in staff's view, at least in my view, is not a very good trigger, because we can't really force them to do something within that time frame, because it's an affirmative act on their part to record something. So the better way is to restrict them from getting some sort of permit. So that's kind of the carrot, which is if you you want this, you have to do this first, as opposed to you have to do this within X time frame, because once we get to that time frame, to then compel them to exercise some sort of discretion is difficult, right? It's the proper way is to limit it to some sort of permit, whether it be a grading permit, certificate of occupancy, or building permit. But that those are the trigger points that we would look at.
Yeah, I would, Mr. Chairman, before we make a motion, I think several possible amendments to conditions were discussed over the last half hour or so. And I think they probably need to do some revisions to the conditions before I'd be comfortable with a motion. So I don't know if we need a timeout or if we need to continue this to a date certain or...
How long do you think staff's going to take and need to do it? We have a 10:30 break coming up. Should we just take that now for 5 or 10 minutes? And
we have amended the language on the open space condition 21 regarding the accessory improvements, limiting it only to the residential structures. We kind of did that through a sidebar conversation through our Teams chat. Mm-hmm. So we have that language. What we would want is direction on when the coastal trail easement needs to be recorded. There's different iterations. You could do prior to a grading permit, prior to certificate of occupancy, prior to a building permit. Maybe it's prior to certificate of occupancy for either parcels one or two, but we'd want some direction, I think, from the commission before we start trying to draft something.
Mm-hmm. You have one ready. We might as well put it up then and ponder it.
Well, the question about occupancy, if we said it was prior to occupancy of either parcel or grading permit for either parcel, does that get into the dilemma, John, of having... potentially two owners doing separate actions before it triggers that you were just talking about?
No, I don't think so, because they both more or less, they're going to run with the land. And we are including what's called the notice of requirements. I've used them pretty extensively with the city of San Luis Obispo, which then will tie actually these conditions into title. It's not necessarily, it's really just giving notice to any future owner of these requirements. So the only thing with the certificate of occupancy is sometimes there's tremendous pressure once a house is done to allow that occupancy to occur. And trying to hold up a trail easement on someone trying to occupy their home, sometimes there's just tremendous pressure on that. So usually it's easier on the building permit side, but again, it's we were considerate of the fact that trail location discussion might go round and round and round, and wanting to allow them to get movement on the house. But
how about if it were prior to issuance of the construction permit for the houses? That way they could at least get started on their grading and get the widening of the road and all that stuff. Occupancy is there's too much pressure to just let people occupy a finished house. So I would feel more comfortable personally, but I'm only one of four of us, if it was tied to the issuance of the building permit for the house, either of the houses.
So I Steve, concur I with that. Totally.
Steve, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say that I think if you would give us 15, 20 minutes to go through and create that language and incorporate it with the other changes, I think we could come back to the commission with that and wouldn't need to continue this to another day. But we would take about 15 minutes or so to get the condition, all the condition changes incorporated, as well as the unseen language so far on the access easement.
And I just want to note, if the commission wants to entertain an additional public comment from Ms. Novak, I see that she has her hand raised on this issue.
Thank you, John. I was just about to note that. Thank you.
Yes, actually, this is really particularly on the coastal trail at the moment, but I wanted to back up for just a minute because there was a question raised on condition number 34 regarding the maximum building height. So I just wanted to offer just a little bit of a clarification on that and maybe hopefully ask for a friendly amendment on this. The maximum height of the project, 15 feet from the average natural grade, was intended for parcel number two house because it does, as staff did say, it sits up on the hill. Now, we were trying to look at the parcel one house, and right now it looks like the roof is 12 feet over the finished floor elevation, which works out, I think, relatively quick, pretty close to this 15 feet from the average natural grade. But absent having the extensive topography in front of us, I would just ask that if you want to have a low-profile house on the parcel one, that we tie it somehow to not to exceed the height as on the proposed plans as presented to the commission.
I think that's fair.
That's fair, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's see what we do with this one.
Okay, and is it the consensus of the commission that we'll take a break for, say, 20 minutes and come back and discuss this further? Any comments on that? Then we'll do that. We'll adjourn That's for fine. 20 minutes, give him an extra five from what he wanted, and see you back here at 10 minutes to 11.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. At this time, we'll just ask for all commissioners and staff to please mute your...
All right, commissioners, we shall reopen the meeting. Staff have a report ready for us.
Yes, this is Shani Xiao. Yes, I have the updated revised condition, Exhibit B, and I'm going to try to share it with on screen now. Okay, so there are a couple of changes throughout this document. So I'm going to try to walk you through and scroll down along the way. So, firstly, we talked about including the grading that over 30% will now include parcel two, and that's the first addition. And then the maximum height of 15 feet is now clearly stated for parcel two. Mm-hmm. And the parcel one height limitations will have to comply with the plans submitted to the department and as approved today, and that will be captured in condition number two.
Excuse me just for a sec there. The intent on that we talked about with parcel one and parcel two was not to eliminate the height limit on parcel one, but to make sure that the house as presented fell within that 15 feet. But if anything ancillary or additions or so on, I think we'd still want them to be within that 15 feet. So I don't think the intent was to loosen the restriction. It was in any substantial way. So I'm not sure I favor that change that you just told us about. You know, it said maximum height is 15 feet from the average national grade for any structures on parcels one or two, except the houses as they're depicted or something like that. I think, you know, we need to be really careful with this language.
Commissioner Moltari, Steve McMaster, I think the reason we have the 15 feet for parcel two is because that is the visual analysis identified that as a hard ceiling of structures can't go above that. Parcel one, and perhaps Ms. Novak might be able to fill in a little bit more. Because I don't think they have the exact calculation. It is not much more than 15, but it may be 16 or 17 feet.
Right, I understand.
Condition number two requires that subsequent plans show development consistent with the site plan, floor plan, and architectural elevations that were shown. So that would apply to parcel one. So we felt that would be enough parameter on parcel one to avoid anything going much above, you know, or something not consistent with what they've shown.
Okay.
Steve, just so I understand, so basically what you're saying is both parcels have to stay within this height requirement, and if any additional structures are built that go through an additional permitting process, they too would be grandfathered in to ensure that they meet this height requirement as well. Is that correct?
So for instance, if the building permits come forward for the residents on parcel one and they show the construction permits show that the structure is, you know, 8 inches higher than what the conceptual architectural elevations identify, you know, we have some flexibility on that site. It could come in at a slightly lower. For parcel two is the one that we wanted the hard ceiling that nothing can go above the 15 feet from average natural grade. You know, this is authorizing those structures, and so condition two would apply to that. Anything additional would have to get additional authorization. But we would have to find it consistent with the conditions for that permit if it went through a separate permit, or this permit if it's covered under this minor use permit.
Okay.
Well, let's go on, and maybe we'll come back to this one.
Okay. The next condition is condition number 20 that talks about the downlisting of the San Luis Obispo County Morning Glory, the plant species. So the word rare is now stricken out. Condition number 21, the open space easement. This is the one that we had quite a bit of revision to. We added the language to tighten up the level of improvements that's allowed that to support the residential developments. So point C is now revised to this language to say improvements needed to develop. So what is allowed is the improvements needed to develop the proposed residential developments within the building envelopes are limited to wastewater system, leach fields, water storage, driveway, and or access road improvements, utilities, and other similar infrastructure improvements. No accessory structures or other structural improvements are allowed in the open space easement area. Then we also added point D today, which we talked about, allowing the restoration and maintenance of the Coast Guard and Kelp Farmer House. So the restoration and maintenance of the maintenance activities shall comply with the Secretary of Interior standards and for historic structures. Any improvements shall keep the structures consistent with the historic look and shall not otherwise be converted to a habitable space. Any such improvements shall be subject to any applicable coastal development permits in the future. So that's the language we added under the open space easement to further clarify what they can and cannot do in the open space. Then the next condition that we amended, sorry for the long scrolling, is condition, this is a new condition, the pre-construction survey. We're adding this, condition here that would require them to conduct pre-construction surveys prior to any ground disturbance. We talked about this during the presentation. This is verbatim, was added to it. And then the coastal trail easement, this is the one, it was the last point that we talked about, and staff deliberated on the timing, and we're coming forth with this proposed language. So prior to the occupancy of the Parcel 1 residence and prior to the issuance of building permit for Parcel 2 residence, the applicant shall then execute and record an easement in the form approved by County Council and also the Executive Director of the California Coastal Commission. And we figure out there was a lot of concern about the timing, whether how feasible it is to get all parties agree. And so we added this language to qualify that, saying the timing for execution and recordation for such easement for the trail can be waived by the Planning and Building Director and Executive Director of the Coastal Commission by an instrument in writing executed by both parties. So in essence, we're allowing them an option to get more time if they can get both parties, the planning director and also the Coastal Commission director, agree that they will be granted such extension and then in some sort of a MOU or agreement and all bonded for. We're allowing the applicant this option to pursue if they're running out of time. Because one of the biggest concerns that we want to raise is this MUP has a time expiration on it. It has 2-year approval, and it also has 3 1-year extensions. It really have 5 years. So it could expire in 5 years if nothing is vested. So we're just putting this language out there for the commission to consider.
Yeah, I don't like it. I would still like to say prior to issuance of a building permit for either residence, and leave your last sentence in that the timing and recordation can be modified by the director and the executive director. I think that gives them enough flexibility, and 5 years is a pretty long time for working this stuff out. And I'm not sure that if they did grading of the road, that wouldn't vest their permit anyway. So I don't like linking it to occupancy on Parcel 1, because we're going to end up with a house on Parcel 1, I bet, and without this having been resolved.
It seems like to me that the more important thing would be before they do anything on the second parcel, just because that's where the current trail basically connects from the adjoining parcel. And so I'm assuming the owners want to build on this parcel, and so that if we just, I would say, required them to do anything before anything was done on Parcel 2, that would be the more important thing.
Well, Alex, this is my argument. I appreciate that. I think under many circumstances that might be true, but this is imagine this is this major trail that's going to be running along the coast, and piecemeal we're putting these little pieces in place. What that does is say that prior that we could allow this lot line adjustment, we could allow them to build this second house, and they could do it down actually right by the ocean, and we wouldn't have necessarily required them to fill in this gap in the trail when we allowed them to do that, because we don't know when parcel two would get developed. What I would like to say is that by giving them permission to build right on the ocean, you know, good for them, that they are also guaranteeing that we're going to have this missing tooth in the trail recorded. And if they need more time, then this condition allows them more time. But I think we're giving them a lot in this location, and we shouldn't forsake the opportunity to get that trail gap filled when either of the houses goes forward. That's my opinion.
Sure. Chair Campbell, I'd just like to note that the agent, Kathy Novak, has her hand raised.
Okay.
So we'll unmute your connection, Ms. Novak.
I'm not getting that on my screen here, so you'll have to bring it to our attention.
Yes, good afternoon. Kathy Novak again. Yes, I understand the issues that the commissioners are struggling with. And thank you for putting in the language for the potential extension for the time, because what we were concerned about, if we put a condition of approval on tied to the grading of the permit grading, that if they start in on a project, of course, with the grading permit first, and we're held up at Coastal, or Coastal wants to take a little bit more time to potentially work out the connection with the Schneiders, for example, and move it a little bit, then we're stuck. And I realize that the time extension in here is acceptable, and that would help. But I think that the way that the staff has proposed the condition is answers the questions, because prior to the occupancy of Parcel 1, which is a trigger point, so that we will have to have the Coastal Trail recorded by that point in time, and then prior to the issuance of the building permit for Parcel 2, again, is another trigger point that we would have to have the Coastal Trail in. So I would just ask the commission to be understanding that doing this Coastal Trail, the point is the Puritans are committed to this, and we're going to be working with the Coastal Commission trying to work all this out. But as you're aware of, the Coastal Commission is sometimes takes a long time to get things done, and it puts us in a difficult position if we're trying to accelerate the timeline for getting the trail in when it's tied to a grading permit, for example. So I would just ask for the commission to accept the way that the staff has proposed this condition.
And John Sullivan, County Council, I just wanted to add one thing. In Title 23, when we talk about vesting, our Title 23 defines substantial site work, and it has to go beyond simply grading in order for that minor use permit to actually vest. It requires, it's when site work has progressed beyond grading and completion of structural foundations and construction. So you have 5 years essentially in order to get to the foundation stage, not just the grading stage, in order to vest under the minor use permit.
How about the retaining walls for the access roads? Wouldn't that constitute a vesting?
So our code says structural foundations. I think that's intended for, you know, the actual, whether our code actually is aligned with AVCO and case law surrounding what vested rights means. I think there's probably some interpretation there.
Yeah.
But I'm just letting the commission know what our code specifically says. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Now, if I may, I think I see what Commissioner Montari is saying here with the issuance of the building permit for both parcels versus staying away from the occupancy. I think that would be this is already such a stressful experience for the owner. I mean, I would think adding that prior to occupancy to is just, wouldn't you want to get that out of the way at the issuance of the building permit than having that over you prior to occupancy? So I'm leaning to agree with Commissioner Molitari that they, instead of prior to occupancy of parcel one residence, it should be prior to issuance of building permit for parcel one and parcel two. What do the other commissioners think?
It would seem to me that that's just going to delay the process, because it sounds like finding the exact route of this trail could take a lot of time. And it seems like we've already, this has been a 20-year process and they've spent a lot of time. If they've made their commitment to putting this trail in, and there's, you know, the caveat that they can't get occupancy on parcel one and they can't get the permit on parcel two, it seems like they're making a pretty good commitment to move this forward. And without us having to throw another hurdle in front of them. So I personally think that the wording is fine. I think they're showing good faith.
I agree with Commissioner Otano. I think the wording is, we're probably not going to get the exact ideal wording for everyone here. And I think it's agreeable to me that the last sentence or paragraph is going to work.
Okay. Well, Shawnee, were there any other changes to the conditions?
No, this is actually the end of it.
That's the last? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
does the commission want to go back to some of the prior ones?
Well, I think while we're going to get stuck on this one unless we get some resolution. You know, I guess I'll backpedal a little bit and say that occupancy would be sufficient trigger. I really am a little hesitant to do that, but I think the argument that Commissioner Billick made that these people have showing good faith all along in the process demonstrates that they're going to try to make this work, and the occupancy trigger would be sufficient. Although we did recognize earlier on that once the house is built, the kind of the practical ability of the permitting agency to withhold occupancy for something like this becomes really difficult. And there's, you know, then you start to get into squirmy things about bonding for this or that. And I don't know if this is a point worth living and dying over. I think the trail would get built no matter what, but I don't know. Commissioner Spearman, would you be willing to yield on this one if this is the sticking point for the permit?
Well, how I look at this is your district, and I would, you know, follow your lead here. I think that I do agree that they have shown great good faith from the open space to the trail to working very hard to find the correct placement for the homes, the height restrictions, the coloring. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, also agree with you. The reason I bring this up, gentlemen, is having gone through this myself, I think that, you know, when you attach something prior to occupancy, there's so much stress around that point in terms of, you know, refinancing and everything else.
Exactly.
You know, I'm looking at it more from the applicant's perspective, but if the applicant feels like this, you know, this is not a stress point for them, and we still get so many things out of this project from the trail and the open space and the way they're building. I would defer to you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And I guess after this discussion, I would accept staff's language on this, perhaps a bit reluctantly, but I think it'll work out okay. So I guess back to the very first of the amended conditions on the 15-foot height limit.
Chair Moultari, real quick, yeah. I believe you wanted waived to be modified, which I think actually is a much better word choice.
Be modified. Yeah, I think that's
better.
That technically probably is better. It probably has the same effect. So back to our very top of this, Shawnee, I think there's one thing that we didn't. Yeah, on the parcel two.
I think we were landing on removing this parcel two specifically.
Please. Yeah, I'd feel better if you did. And we're approving their permits for the, maybe if you added up on the A, the two buildings as illustrated in the submitted materials. That I think something like that addresses Kathy's concern about if there's a little bit of variance. Although I would note that staff always has, some discretion on these conditions to, if something is a little bit off, as you I think Steve said, well, if it's 8 inches, no one's going to fuss about that. But if it's 8 feet, it's a big deal. So, I think I would feel better with this, if that's okay with the other commissioners.
Yes.
I agree.
Okay. All right. So, anything else, fellow commissioners, before I try a motion? Any last comments?
Sorry,
staff?
Commissioner Moultari. Shawnee, I believe there was another condition that was tied to the part, to that height. I want to say number 15 or so.
I think
that was duplicative. If you can bring that back
up. Yes. Yes. Thank you, John. Good memory. We had a specific, and it's typical in the conditions. We make sure that if heights are critical, we make sure that it is called out in the measurement during construction, like they will measure on site. Now, where is?
I think it's 34, maybe.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Everything with the scrolling here. Here, 34, yes. So we actually was trying to make it tight, but okay, I'm going to remove this. All right. So, okay, so that's done. Thank you, John. Okay. So I think that's it. We captured all the revisions. We made the changes, removing the parcel two specifically to the heights. And yes, I think we captured all.
Okay. Well, if there's no other comments then from my fellow commissioners or from the staff, I move approval of the lot line adjustment, minor use permit, coastal development permit, and variance, and adoption of the mitigated negative deck. As described in our staff report, based on the findings in the staff report and subject to the conditions as modified today.
Second to that motion?
Second.
And moved and seconded. May we have a roll call, please, Ramona?
Commissioner Moultari?
Yes.
Commissioner Villicana?
Yes.
Commissioner Spearman?
Yes.
And Chairman Campbell?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. That the one of the sides.
Unless there's further comments, I will entertain a motion to take all testimony and documents into record.
Mr. Chairman, I see that Kathy Novak has her hand raised. I don't know if she.
Someone has
their hand raised to comment. Is that?
This is Kathy Novick here. I just wanted to say thank you very much to the commission and staff for all your time spent on this. I believe that between all of us, we've come up with a very good project, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Okay. Then I'd move that we take all materials and testimony into the record.
Second.
Please vote. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. That motion is carried. I'll now entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Oh, so moved.
I'll jump on that.
So moved twice. A motion and a second. Alex moved. Michael seconded. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion's carried. We are adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you all very much. Mm-hmm. Very complex one.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you to staff. They did a great job presenting this one. Thank you.
Staff, thank you for your time this morning.
Staff, I have one comment to make. When the written stuff was up there, I was able to follow Shawnee, but I'm getting quite a vibration in her voice here, and it wasn't real clear to understand her all the time, and as well with John. So I don't know if there's something that's at my end or whether something it might be looked at from your end.
I picked up a little of that as well.
Thank you, Chair Campbell. We do acknowledge that there was a little bit of feedback, and we'll be working to provide staff's headsets, and I think that will help with some of the feedback that you may have been receiving during the meeting.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Take care, everyone.